You have to live it and you have to believe in it. Going to work for me is not a job.
Bold businesses.
It's been an interesting learning curve.
Do it on the side.
That's what keeps me up at night.
Do it differently.
It is a bit of a risk.
Mate, it was exciting.
Powered by Vodafone.
Hi and welcome to the Bold Businesses podcast. I'm Cara Waters, Fairfax's small business editor at The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald. Over the past episodes, we've met entrepreneurs at the beginning of their business career, as well as those who've successfully built multi-million dollar brands. And something that's common to all these strong businesses, no matter what their stage, is a good handle on the admin side of things. It's often seen as the boring drudge work, but experts are clear in their message that without good administration, even the best business ideas will fail. Today, I've got Jess Poloshek in the studio with me to talk about how someone with an artistic background and creative interests juggles the passion with the paperwork. But before she arrived here, we sent our producer out to have a nosy around her Darlinghurst gallery and design store.
Our events that we have, like when we open the exhibitions or if we ever do anything else, they're also very much that style, very informal. There's often kids running around. So we set up like the kids on the seat down there with pens and paper and pencils, and because they're very much of the attitude of, I can draw stuff, so can you hang this on your wall, like on the wall? Like, why do you have that up there? You could have my art up there. So I definitely encourage that. I love that whole sensibility. And then inevitably the adults get involved, so they can't help themselves.
So what was the original idea behind Tribe? How did you come to start it?
It started quite differently to where it's ended up now. I always knew I wanted to have a store and ideally wanted a bricks and mortar store, but was much more financially viable to start online. Also because my age and experience, I thought it was better to start online. It's easier to make mistakes when you're online. It was a good learning platform, but it started as a way for creative people that I knew who were working in quite creative jobs, but very, you know, business jobs, to have a creative outlet to do something for themselves. They were making lots of things on the side, or people had all these ideas of side projects that they wanted to pursue but didn't really have a platform.
So when you started it off, how much did you have to put in to fund it? Was it expensive getting the website set up?
The website itself wasn't expensive, and I've got a design degree and design background, and my husband, luckily enough, is a graphic and web designer.
That's handy.
Very handy. So it's good to kind of pull resources from wherever you can when you're starting a business. So that was really helpful, although he did leave a lot of it to me to do. Which to his credit was a good idea, made me learn a lot. So it wasn't hugely expensive to set up the website, but dealing with stock and dealing with artists is where the money comes into it. I really didn't want to be a dropship model. I wanted to be able to send the stock out myself and have our brand on it and have our we were big into gift wrapping and the sort of experience. I wanted it to be a really fun experience to receive something, so I felt like I needed to be in control of every touch point, which meant that we needed to have the product, which caused a huge amount of logistical issues considering I live in a one-bedroom apartment and we couldn't afford studio space. So it was very much like that at the beginning. It's a lot of smoke and mirrors, which I'm sure any small business owner will tell you when they start up. It's sort of putting a picture out there of how it looks is not necessarily what's going on in the background.
Yeah. And what made you take the leap from an online store to bricks and mortar presence?
It definitely was the getting into the Creative Spaces program. I had in my business plan originally that within, hopefully by the end of the first 5 years, I would be in a position where I felt comfortable enough that it was going to work, that then I could look into getting a commercial lease. But then two and a half years in, I think it was about, the opportunity came up with the City of Sydney to apply for their Creative Spaces program. We'd done a few pop-ups, which were really fun and I'd really enjoyed. And the plan was to keep doing those. So every 6 months I was going to do another pop-up. But then I got accepted into that program. That just changed everything.
And what's the benefit of having a physical store as opposed to just having your online store? How's that changed your business?
It's totally astronomically changed it. In a bricks and mortar, yes, you're paying rent and you have to pay staff and all those things, but people walk in and they're immediately immersed in your world. So for us, dealing with art and design products and dealing with a lot of handmade products, online there was a real disconnect between the tactileness of a product and the emotional connection that people have with colour and texture. And so it's been awesome to see that. And also the community aspect, which I think was something that we semi-planned for, but also has just become naturally come about because it turns out, I guess, that that's what is really important to me. So when I originally was setting up the business, I didn't really think about it from that perspective. But then as we've got to different stages and I've sort of reflected on what parts I like and what parts I don't and what is important to me and what makes it fun and what makes it worth it, always comes back to the community part and the fact that we're a sort of middleman for these artists and designers, giving them a platform to get exposure.
And when you talk about the business, you talk about we, but it's not you, isn't it? It's just you.
Yeah, I think, well, yes, it's me and I'm the director and the founder of it. But I say we, I guess, because I never feel like I've done anything on my own. I'm very aware of the fact that I wouldn't be where I was if it wasn't for about 100 other people that have helped me in various ways.
You started the business as a creative person. Mm-hmm. Do you need a numbers brain as well, or can you learn that administrative side of things?
I'm not going to lie, it would help hugely, but I don't have one at all. I was terrible at maths and, yeah, never did any of those subjects at school, didn't have any interest in them. But I have now developed a massive interest in them. And I think if you're serious about having your own business, you have to find that stuff interesting. So if you're not good at it, you can learn a lot, but I think you've got to be willing to take advice from people as well and know that you're going to make mistakes along the way.
How has technology helped you with running Tribe?
Oh, like so much. It's a hugely technological business. I don't know how I would do half of it without the internet and without all of the amazing programs that, yeah, we have now. Also, just the fact that you can access information from wherever you are is amazing. So it's good and it's bad because it means your business is with you 24/7. But the reality is that if you're on your own business, it's with you 24/7 anyway.
So what are the key programs that you use then on your phone?
Yeah, on my phone. Well, I pretty much run everything through Google. So Google has access to every part of my business. And these days, all the integrations and third-party kind of apps that connect, plugins that connect everything are amazing. But so the whole website is run through WordPress. So we've got a WordPress site. They're probably the biggest key ones.
I'm here in the studio talking with Jess Polashek about how business owners can learn to manage their administrative responsibilities and turn their interests into a viable business model. After the break, we'll meet business advisor Annie Flanagan, who's an entrepreneur herself and is here to give us some ideas about streamlining the admin burden. For the Tribe art and design owner, Jess Polashek, juggling her creative passion with admin and paperwork has been a challenge, but one that she's winning thanks to her partnership with Vodafone. As Jess spends a lot of time on her phone, access to files across laptops, tablets and smartphones when she's out and about is key to her success. That's why Vodafone provides a range of world-leading business apps, like Dropbox Business, a storage and sharing solution, to help businesses like the Tribe stay connected with colleagues, partners, vendors and customers. To start your journey, search Vodafone Business.
Lists are very important. I'm still trying to master the art of how to prioritise a list, because anyone who has a small business like mine and is trying to put on about 50 different hats every day, I don't know what the best way is to take all of those lists and work out which part is the most important or what you should focus on, because you put on your marketing hat and you go, this is the most important thing I need to do today. But then your finance hat is going, no, but you need to do this. And then your retail hat's going, no, but this is the most important.
That was Jess Polashek talking about running her business Tribe, which is a gallery and a retail store and a workspace and a platform to help local artists launch their own creative brands. We've got Annie Flanagan, who founded Better Business Basics, in our Melbourne studio. Hi, Annie.
Thanks so much for having me.
Annie, how familiar is that struggle for early stage businesses trying to divide their time between their different responsibilities?
It's been really good listening to Jess, because I've been sitting here smiling and laughing to myself because a couple of things. It was my journey and has been my journey to a T, and also all of the businesses that we've worked closely with over the last 10 or 11 years. So it's so common. It really is common. It's almost a rite of passage.
So you're in a particular position because you started your own business as well as having worked with a lot of others. What's the danger you see if people put the drudge work on the back burner?
My experience is that people think about this too late. So they're so involved in, quite rightly, their product and their passion and what they love. And it's particularly common around creatives, I think. One of the things that I find really fascinating is that I'm seeing a divide between businesses. There are those people who you know are going to survive and those people who you are almost certain won't. And it's got very little to do with their business idea, them as a personality. It's those businesses that grapple with this topic we're talking about, because it unravels so many businesses. It's terrifying. For me, the warning signs are we work so closely with businesses around cash flow, and I'm still amazed. And look, this is something I had to learn. I mean, I didn't know this either. And a lot of this is something which a lot of business owners don't understand, the difference between profit and cash. So people that look at their bank balance and say, well, I'm actually doing okay. Look at my bank balance is looking actually quite healthy. But because they can't read their financials or don't have somebody in their close group, a mentor or a friend or a parent or somebody who can actually look at their financials and say, this looks okay, but actually there's some warning signs here. It's understanding those warning signs before they become really big. And I know it sounds terribly boring, but that's the stuff that unravels people.
And what are some of the key changes in administrative needs and requirements that happen as a business grows?
Oh, for me, there are two key stages, if you like. And it's difficult to put a time frame around them because it's a different journey for every single business that's out there. But for me, there's pre-employees and post-employees. So I think when you're working alone as a sole trader, or even if it's within a company, until you have employees, there's you and your liabilities and your worries and your, I guess, responsibilities are much less.
So how does Jess take that next step, or businesses like hers, from the early stage and the sole traders to starting to grow?
I think understanding the way that numbers run the story in the background in your business is so important. So what I mean by that is that numbers actually aren't as boring as people first think. They tell a story in every business. And understanding what that story is telling you is fundamental to how you then move forward.
And Jess talked about using a number of different tech tools to help her. How useful are those for business owners, and where do you see them going wrong relying on technology?
I think the wonderful applications and software that's out there is a couple of things. One, it's very easy to use. And secondly, it's inexpensive, fairly inexpensive to get yourself up and running. And that does two things. It demystifies it, which is great. But also I think it can lull you into a slightly false sense of security that you know what you're doing. Because remembering, understanding your financials is something that most people have to learn. And then you have to decide whether it's something you want to continue doing or whether you actually want to play to your strengths and pass that on to somebody else. But it is important that you make that decision quite early on. What these technical tech tools give you fundamentally is you can read the data as it's happening, rather than what used to happen is that you waited a month, you got all your financials together, then you looked at it by which time has passed. Whereas the great thing about things that Jess has been talking about, you can actually look at that thing on a daily, you can look at it on a daily basis as it's happening and actually make decisions on a rolling basis rather than on a static basis. And that's a fundamental shift in how people run their businesses.
You think that's good though, that you should, sometimes I worry that like changing what you're doing based on numbers that you're getting constantly is, I don't know, I'm always worried that that's maybe not a good idea.
When I left school, I went into retail. I did about 12 months of retail where we were working 24/7 every weekend, you know, you do when you're 17, 18. And I remember retail was only ever as good as the day before's takings. And you were on a high or a low depending on what kind of a trading day you'd had the day before. And there is a danger of that. But I think one of the things we should be getting much smarter about is taking that live data and then being able to step back and look at it in context,
yeah,
and actually understand what it's telling you, what's the story it's telling you. And that, I think, is where the sort of gold is. It sits in there. It's not just data. It's about data in context and what it's telling you. And I think the more you talk to other people around you and the more you confer with your peers and people who – a safe space, obviously it needs to be safe, but the more you can actually drop – your information into context, into a bit of a more 3D rather than a table. So everyone looks at figures in tables and graphs. I see it much more pictorially, probably because I'm, you know, I'm more of a creative type person. I don't know if that helps, but I think it's trying to change the tag. It is seen as being boring and dull and something that people have to do. And
yeah, because it should, I mean, yeah, I don't find it boring. I find it really interesting.
It's really fascinating. It is really fascinating, but it is about your attitude to it.
And Jess, what kind of advice would you be looking for from a business advisor like Annie?
Oh my gosh, there's so many things.
Ask away.
I guess what I struggle with is I've got all of the numbers there. And the historical information is incredible to have, and to be able to see the whole journey of your business is really great. And then to the forecasting part is hard.
That's the challenge.
Yeah, it's really hard. So to know you've got, I think you have to follow your intuition, but I guess once you've got everything in place and you feel like, okay, I think I've done lots of good groundwork and set things up really well, but then now what do I do?
One of the challenges, I think, with growing a business, and going back to one of the earlier questions, is that when you're small, your gut instinct is your guiding light. That's the thing that you go back to internally, which guides you through the bumps in the road.
Yeah.
As you grow, one of the challenges is that intuition is important, but it becomes less important when it comes to some of the hard business decisions you need to make. Because as it gets bigger and as you get employees, if that's the route you choose, you then have to start relying on hard facts.
Yeah.
And it's where I see creatives struggle a lot, because they by their very nature, they're probably much more in tune with their intuition than other people in business. And I see that as they get bigger, they start to lose the voice, hearing the little voice that actually guides them. And it's at that point, it's at that critical crossroads that they need to make a decision about transitioning from instinct to fact and instinct. It's a real challenge though.
Yeah, it is. That's sort of the lack of resources available to a business at sort of my stage. So there's a lot for when you are starting up or when you've had an idea and you've got a side hustle and you want to turn it into a full-time thing. But you sort of go, yeah, that was me about a year ago. Now it's at the point where I can't rely on being a brand new business anymore to as an excuse for, you know, it needs to start to grow, it needs to be taking on staff, need to be upping the turnover.
The thing to remember is that close to 60% of businesses close within the first 3 years. I mean, that's a bit sobering. So if you actually think about it, if you're still standing after 3 years, you're doing something very right.
Yeah.
But also, it normally isn't because the idea that they start off with, that there's anything wrong with that. Very often it's because they just run out of money. And so if we as a business community can find a way to minimise that, and that comes from, I think, two key things. One, knowing where you are. But also I think we need to start talking much more openly about how our businesses are doing and failure around why things aren't working.
Yeah.
I've learned so much by talking to other people and being vulnerable enough to say, look, I screwed up here. I did this and this didn't really work. And people will nod their head, because actually